Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchless.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined by Dr. Evil. I mean, it's the chair turn.
You know, Cashew isn't in the room even.
I know.
You got to have Cashew in the room.
You did a slow chair turn and you have a cat and you didn't have the cat in your lap for the slow chair turn.
No. The wife is home, so they're hanging out in the other room. And look, guys, I know we're a day late. I apologize profusely. It's on me. I said, you know what, Eric, let's just do it tomorrow. Yep. And I was under the weather the last 2 days, no Plus Pitch podcast, all of that. So we're here now.
We are.
Let me know also. And this morning I did a different version of the SP Roundup as far as, like, I didn't do the Plus Pitch podcast, but I did a review showcasing how I do my analysis with my dashboard. And check that out on YouTube. Tell me how you feel about that. But we're getting this out now, midday Friday, just in time for Friday night's games.
I will also check that out because I didn't see it. And I got to tell you, I'm happy we're doing this on Friday because there were a couple performances on Thursday night that or Thursday afternoon that we would have missed that I am very excited to talk about.
All right. So we're going to do that today.
We're going to dive right in. And because we do not want to always short shrift the NL, we are going to start in the NL today. And we're going to start in the NL East with the Braves, who have three against the Giants to wrap up this weekend. They go three at home against St. Louis and three at home against the Mets, who have recently fired their manager, Carlos Mendoza.
They fired him.
It's two-start week for Grant Holmes. But we got to start with who's starting on Friday night. And the demotion of J.R. Richie back to the minor leagues has opened up a rotation spot for Reynaldo Lopez again. And I'm curious if you are back in on Reynaldo Lopez as a member of the Braves starting rotation.
I mean, no. Not until, like, he actually shows up and does anything that we care about, you know?
Sure.
I know it's the Giants, and then you'll get St. Louis after. I'm not expecting to jump in.
So let's say the start against the Giants today is a decent one.
Okay.
What league types would you say, okay, it's worth a gamble because what we've seen what he 15. Can do. 15s. Okay. I'm on board with that too. We wrote him up in our waiver wire column. He's only 8% rostered in Yahoo right now. And I basically said that in the waiver column, which is, like, it's been a fine season for him. And, you know, mostly as a reliever, hasn't been great, but hasn't been awful. But we saw what he could do when he was healthy, and it's pretty barren out there. And so if this start against the Giants is good enough, is fine on Friday, I could see in a 15-team league saying, I'd rather just chase the upside on this than, like, a guy like Javier Assad, who is currently pitching well, but I don't think we really believe in that.
Yeah, we don't believe in Assad. That's a clear thing of matchups to me.
Yes.
With Assad.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we get there. As far as the rest of Atlanta goes, Martin Perez is a weird Vargas rule, so if you want to do that against St. Louis, fine. Bryce Elder will get the Giants and Mets, so okay, but I still don't really buy into that. And the rest of them, Grant Holmes and Chris Sale, pretty straightforward.
Grant Holmes is a two-start week, St. Louis and the Mets in a 15-team league, yes or no?
It's like he's selling me the houses right before the crash in 2009.
Okay.
Okay.
Don't want those. You don't want those. No. Actually, you don't want those at all. No. Miami, three at St. Louis this weekend. Four at Colorado, three at Sacramento next week. It's going to be a great week for Miami bats and not so much for Miami starting pitchers.
No, no, no.
That's a two-start week for both Sandy Alcantara and Yuri Perez. They both are at Coors at Sacramento. Are you still rolling both of them out or one of them? What are you doing?
So I needed to say something really quickly, Eric. If you guys didn't know, on Twitter, I did a whole post about my terms. Ideate is a good word, Eric, and don't you dare tell me not to use that word because I love ideating.
To me, it's like a finance word. Like
I understand, but it's one of my favorite things ever is just ideating. It's just brainstorming. Same thing, whatever.
Just say brainstorming. I like brainstorming.
The same idea. Anyway, same idea. There was someone that mentioned, great, now please pronounce Sandy's name correctly.
We have been. I just want to say.
And, here's the thing. I actually asked, I was like, hey, look, there are five different ways I've heard it. There's Khan or Khan, and then there's Tara or Tara, and then there's also the Contra. So I went back and I watched again the video from 2022 of Sandy getting asked this question, intentional talk, and he said it's Alcantara. So it's Tara. really quickly. It's Ankantra, right? And not Tara, not Tra, Kantara. And the reply was, well, all the announcers has been saying Contra.
Right. Well,
and
that's
I
because said, well,
no, but I think you're wrong, Nick, because the announcers say Contra.
Well, it
and I'm like, well, that's what literally Sandy said it though.
Well, but it's the Anglicization of the way he says it. If you say it quickly without any sort of with improper pronunciation, with improper accents, you say a Contra, which is not what he's saying. It's not Contra, right. It's like Contra. The old Nintendo game Contra.
Yeah, and that's exactly.
That is what it sounds like when it's some Andy of us El white Contra. People try to say the name.
Okay.
Quickly.
So just so we're all on the same page. I got argued about that. My source being Sandy Alcantara himself was not correct. And it is correct in my view. Now, Sandy Alcantara in Colorado and then in Sacre Verte. I mean, I want a term also for just like a lot of road trips are like this. They finally go off west. And so they have to deal with both Coors and with Sacre Verte back and forth. He's been giving you quality starts. He's pitching a little bit better. He's not at the place that he was in 2022. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just not the same Sandy still. So I have him as a questionable start in 12 teamers. I think you kind of have to in a 15, but understand that if you do this in a two step, yes, you do have a chance for a win and you do have, especially quality start. Like I understand you are going to take a hit with your whip. I would be absolutely blown away if you don't. And not to mention, it's not just a normal hit. It's a doubly bad one because it's going to be likely over 12 innings as opposed to like six.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind with Eury Pérez. No, thank you. I'm just waiting to see him do okay. So I have him as a do not start for both.
I liked the amount of strikes he threw in his return back, but there weren't a lot of whiffs. And so
a few pitches as well.
I'm happy he's coming back, but I'm taking this week off if I can from him. And Max Meyer, great, looks good. And I'm not really interested in Gusto and Phillips outside of obviously the deeper formats and not in this week given these matchups.
Is it Gusto?
Gusto?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Like Gustavo. But that's like,
this guy's got a lot of gusto. And so I just, I'd say it the other way, but who knows?
That makes sense. By the way,
I pronounce it Contra, Ryan Contra. No?
Don't you dare do this right now. Do you do rankings in season actually, Eric?
Well, Nick, I have them ready to go, and I've been trying to do them for a couple of weeks, but I have a lot of other weekly content, and then the NBA finals, I've been writing basketball content, and so we just decided, look, the All-Star break is like 2 weeks away, just get them out like for the break, and so I have rankings ready.
Okay, before I talk about that, I've got to say, I'm really proud of you. You did a great job covering the ticker tape parade. The Knicks and just in general, sent it to my wife. She loves it. Like, guys, I think it's just really cool that this Eric Samulski, who I still don't understand how you don't have 10,000 followers on Twitter. Please go follow him at Samulski NYC now. Thank you. And you're just involved in all of it. It's amazing that you do everything. So great job. Great work. Where do you have Max Meyer?
Thank you. Where do I have Max Meyer? Well, I have to pull up this document. So that's going to be, I pull up the document. Talk to me.
What's about your heart say?
The Mets starting pitchers, three at Toronto, three at Atlanta next week. Peralta had a pretty decent start last time out. But I feel like you're kind of holding McClain and Peralta and hoping for the best and maybe streaming Manaea. And then is that it?
All right. So you have Thornton, who is going to be in the David Peterson spot, which, by the way, what a wild deal.
Yeah,
that just blows my mind. And then Christian Scott from a minimal IL stint. But it's still ill to me still, regardless of the 15 days. And so I'm not starting him really against the Phillies. I might have to update that actually to be a do not start instead of a questionable start. And then you have Christian Scott at Atlanta that I don't want to do either. With McClain, I feel like you just got to do it. The Jays are not that impressive to me. I mean, they're worse against lefties than they are righties, but still just not. I feel like you're okay with McClain. And then Manaea against lefties, cool. You do that. Is a questionable as against Toronto. Freddie Peralta, I think, is very frustrating if you have him on your fantasy teams. And I saw him yesterday against the Cubs. I was like, yeah, you are you're Freddie Peralta. You know? I mean, like this is kind of who you are. I mean, in your heart, where was Max Meyer? Where do you actually have him, Aaron?
So I have Max Meyer. And remember, I'm doing mine from All-Star break on, so rest of season.
Okay.
I have him 35th. Okay. So I have an article that's hopefully coming out either later today or Monday that's starting pitcher buy sells, and I looked at a lot of things from May 1st on and looked at ERA and Sierra, but also like Stuff Plus and Location Plus, and obviously I'm using pitcher list stuff, but his Stuff Plus is actually below average from May 1st on. It's just a 98 Stuff Plus from Max Meyer from May 1st on. The results have been good, but the Sierra is 3.6. And I like Max Meyer. I think especially in the second half of the season, we might come up towards some general fatigue because he's battled lots of injuries throughout his career. And so we haven't actually gotten a full season from him. And so I think some of your August-ish and on starts may start to just be battles with going late into games or whatever. So I like what I'm seeing, but like I have a guy like Freddy Peralta over him. I just have seen Freddy Peralta for years put together really, and I think that he is going to bounce back into being a pitcher that I closer to what I expected in the first half. And so if you're telling me like from now on, I would probably rather have Peralta than Meyer. And I understand that that is some like wish casting and using the past rather than using what's currently going on. I'm fully aware of that.
I mean, you know, all we can do is really use the past in many ways. And I think you made a really good point about Max Meyer probably getting fatigued in the second half. I don't know about that. You know, since May 1st, the Stuff Plus being kind of average is interesting. I mean, from my perspective, I just see the best fastball of his career with the thing that he's been missing for so long with these really ridiculous breaking balls that have consistently performed well. And despite us being like, all right, is this going to last? It just has for a long time now. So as far as like the next month goes, 100% Max Meyer over Freddy Peralta.
Yeah.
Now, No. I think you're agreeing with me on that. Don't worry. I think I'm right. So 2 to 3 months out, where are they at? That's an interesting to me. I will take the guy who's performing now over the guy we hope is performing well later.
Fair. That makes sense. And I think obviously a big wrinkle, which you are not going to, I mean, Nick has always said this, and I think you're really good about it. Like not over planning for the future. What's going to happen when so-and-so comes off the IL? What's going to happen when so-and-so gets traded? You don't know. You can't plan for that.
Well,
I think it's very likely Peralta gets traded. He may get traded to a better team. He may get traded to a better park.
But yeah.
He may get traded to a worse park. We don't know. So you can't plan ahead for that. But I do think that will eventually factor into the calculus when we know where he winds up.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going
to
be New York.
And one thing to really think about there is if we're saying that's even of like, hey, cool, we expect the next month to be good for Max Meyer, then even for a month of Peralta and Meyer, and then better for Peralta. Well, value now is worth more than value later.
and sometimes it is a calculus of where you at in your standings. So if I'm in first and I'm feeling pretty good and I have a guy like Max Meyer, or I have a guy who I'm trying to think of like but like you've got a guy who is a young pitcher who hasn't put together a full season, the guy like maybe a Parker Messick or whatever. And you might just say, look, I want to take a gamble on one of these guys who's not performing right now, but I think is a really good starting pitcher and is going to put it together. And then the end of the season, they can carry me to the finish line and I'll take a little hit now for a strong finish.
All right. So, well, we're going to move on to the Phillies.
We're going to move on. I think that was
a
useful detour, but it was a detour.
Yeah.
We have the Phillies. They get 3 at the Mets this weekend. 4 against Pittsburgh next week, and then just 2 against the Royals, which may again be a World Cup thing. I'm just guessing. It's a 2-start week for Aaron Nola. I wanted to bring that up because Aaron Nola, in this article, when I'm looking at from May 1st on, Aaron Nola popped just in the data. So we obviously need to do research beyond the data. But from May 1st on, Aaron Nola has a 5.29 ERA, but it's a 3.98 Sierra.
Sure.
It's a 15.4% strikeout minus walk ratio, which is above average. It's a 107 Stuff Plus. It's a 107 location plus. And so,
oh man. So I got to tell you guys right now, it's really funny. Eric knows. Eric is laughing right now. We're going to cut this, I guess.
Here I'm back. Go. I know. It was I'm a back. Brief.
Eric just loses brief. His volume at times. It's actually, yeah. It's his vocal cords. It's an unbelievable curse that a witch placed on him, is that whenever he gets more passionate, sound is heard by anyone.
My voice gets more high pitched and then the microphone just shuts off. But anyway, that's my question to you is, the underlying metrics would suggest that Aaron Nola is due for some positive regression. Now, a 3.98 ERA isn't like, hey, peak Aaron Nola, but it is at least a average to slightly above average major league starter. And if I'm getting a pitcher, if I had a 3.98 ERA Aaron Nola in a two-start week against Pittsburgh and Kansas City, I might say, hey, that's a pretty good setup.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if you're by that there may be some positive regression coming for Aaron Nola.
Okay. So first question I'm going to ask you as I go into this, just want you to think about it. How do you feel when someone says the words underlying metrics to you?
I don't hate it as much as other people do. I really don't. it's what they are. Like
I know. Well, the thing is, like, all of them aren't in a council.
Process metrics? Okay,
the underlying metrics say this. You know, yeah. It's like they've released their statement.
Right. It's more I refer to them as surface level stats and underlying metrics.
Interesting. Under the hood. Okay, cool. I do pitch level. I don't know. I just think like underlying metrics. I hear that sometimes.
Process level stats.
I think I have like a traumatic effect when I know it's going to be a conversation that is people just yelling at Sierra. And then be like, that's not how I function.
Right.
And they go, what do you mean? That's not the underlying. Anyway, I'm so sorry, guys. It's the scientists believe. I'm just kidding. Anyway, with Aaron Nola, his velocity changes and it really bothers me. He goes 93 to 94 some games and all of a sudden it's 91, 92 in another. Some days he has his four seamer and his sinker working really well with location. And he has a bit lately. Against the Mets and the Nationals, he certainly did that, but it wasn't against the White Sox. It wasn't really against the Brewers either. It's, you know, when I see all of those things, that, like the underlying metrics, I'm so sorry. But what that does is it takes all of it and clumps it into one thing.
And May 1st on is a large enough sample size that it's not getting all that nuance.
Well, it's always weird with sample size. It's about, okay, is this a trend that we think is working as far as what he's doing? Mm-hmm. Now, results are going to be like back and forth. It's kind of like me and you about home road splits, about you're clumping all of it together into one, as opposed to like, well, here's getting a little bit granular and you can kind of understand the narrative of it. Sometimes they are right, sometimes they aren't, but right. So when it comes to the overall approach of Aaron Nola and how he's doing, I mean, it's a gamble, right? Like against the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Royals, I feel as if he should be okay against the Royals. The Pirates, I just learned this today, Eric. They are the second best WRC plus offense against right-handers.
Yeah.
Second best.
I'm curious what that is since they've lost O'Neill Cruz and Connor Griffin.
That is a very good point. And this is all the underlying metrics say that the Pittsburgh Pirates are.
And now Spencer Horwitz also.
Also, who do they face during it, right? Is it better now? Is it better? Right, exactly. But right. So personally, I can see myself on a desperate Sunday. Being like, cool, Aaron Nola, I need a chance at 5 innings, 6 innings, and this is the perfect kind of Hail Mary play. But if I'm saying, great, I got my two-step of Aaron Nola, I feel really good about this. I don't know. I feel he's in that coin flip territory, kind of like Tanner Bibee, kind of like Tatsuya Imai. These guys where you just kind of throw out there and you just hope for the best. Jose Soriano's in there. Mm-hmm. They have the capability, but it's I don't know what we're going to get from Aaron Nola because I don't think Aaron Nola knows what we're going to get.
I get that. I think in a 15-team league this upcoming week, I would roll the dice personally.
Yes,
I understand fully what you're saying.
I will always say 12-team unless I say 15. Well,
12-team Aaron Nola, Kansas City, I would do. But in terms of the full start. Well, we'll see how Pittsburgh goes. But yes.
It doesn't matter if Pittsburgh does because you don't know.
Yeah. Moving on to the Nationals. They get 3 at Baltimore this weekend, 3 at Boston next week, 3 against Pittsburgh. It's 2-start week for Miles Michaelis, which I am not interested in. Foster Griffin continues to be pitching really well and worth starting when he gets matchups like this and on the run that he's on. And look, Cade Cavalli gets the Red Sox. It's in Boston, which isn't great. It's an offense that's just not that good right now. And so it's risky, but I could see doing it for the matchup. He looked, he performed against the Phillies yesterday. He faded towards the end, but you know, it's going to be a much easier task against the Red Sox.
So I got three things for you. One, Cade Cavalli against the Red Sox. The Red Sox are really bad against right-handers. They always are against right-handers. And Cade Cavalli had a really good curveball yesterday. Fine. I'm cool with it. Awesome. Two, awesome for the Nationals. They hosted Gotham Chess. If you don't know, this Lovie Rossman. And it was such a good video. It was really cool just seeing him play against CJ Abrams and James Wood. And like, as someone who was taught by Bruce Pandolfini as when I was a kid and went to tournaments and was the president of my chess club, of course, I'm a giant nerd. You guys know this about me. But it's like my world's colliding almost seeing him in the clubhouse playing these guys. I thought that was really cool with the Nationals that they did that. Also, you forgot about Alan Rangel with the Phillies. And I got to say, Alan Rangel, I know you're shaking your head like this. The only guy in the majors that has a legitimate screwball going like this, walk like an Egyptian, throwing one. It is a horizontal focus plus positive curveball, which you never see because he's such a high arm angle. He also has an Estrada changeup at like 80 miles per hour. So it's 92 to 80. And there is an opportunity because I think what's going to happen is that tomorrow on Saturday, Alan Rangel is going to go against the Mets and he's not going to have a bad game. It's not going to be bad. I think he's going to have an opener again. I hope he does. And then you're going to be like, well, now he gets the Pirates. Okay, right. We just talked about the Pirates. Not so fun. I wouldn't really do that. If you're in an NL-only league, I would be considering Alan Rangel. That's all I'm going to say there. He is the Andrew Painter replacement right now. We can move on to the NL Central, but we will, Eric, after this break.
I had that teed up, just so you know. Was ready to do it. A lot of digression in that first half. Here we go. Starting in the NL Central with the Chicago Cubs. Three at Milwaukee this weekend, three against the Padres, and three against the Cardinals next week. That's two start week for Shota Imanaga. We should just say that he is an auto start on your document. And so I know that there were some people that are a little worried about
home runs
and
yeah, but you know, it's the Padres who are one of the worst offenses in baseball right now.
So. You're going to fire it up. My question to you is, what did you see out of Matthew Boyd in his return last night? And do you feel good enough? Again, Padres versus lefties. But do you feel good enough using Matthew Boyd right away?
Yeah, no. Matthew Boyd, shaking off the rust, has changeup generally down, fastball generally up. Like, needed more strikes with the changeup and the slider. So that will be better. David Peterson, look, watch. It's going to work out because that's what the Mets, you know, history of the curse is. Assad against the Padres should not be overlooked. Colin Ray should not be necessarily overlooked in your deeper formats. There is some 12-teamer upside because he just generally does perform well against streaming situations. But yeah, it's pretty straightforward. I am so curious to see what Vince Velasquez does.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He was in playing NPB or KBO, I can't remember which one, for a moment, I think, too. It's just wild to me.
Yeah. It's a nice story to have him back.
Yes.
The Reds, three at the Pirates this weekend, four at Milwaukee next week, and three at Baltimore. It's two-start week for Nick Lodolo at Milwaukee, at Baltimore. I understand Lodolo has not been people's favorite person of late, but we've chatted about him just last week in terms of just like understanding what his general upside is and has been. We should get Hunter Green back next week. That is currently the plan. We'll see how the what could be final rehab start goes, but Hunter Green is either back next week or the week after. So if you were stashing him, that's great. And that likely means that Rhett Lauder will be out of the rotation, would be my guess
yes.
in terms of how that works out.
Now, as far as Lodolo goes, we like him a lot more than Landon Roop, of course, as a person. Nick Lodolo, look, he got a comeback. He was pitching so well. He got removed from that last one. He should be fine. And I think you should totally roll with him. Hunter Green has looked good enough in his rehab. The thing I've been focusing on the most is his slider strike rate. He did well in his first one. And the second one, it was, I think, 11 out of 25 strikes. So not fun there, but generally close to the area. And I would feel okay starting him as Cashew decides now to show up. I would feel okay starting him. It is a still ill. Monitor the last one, but it looks like he will be around 75 pitches in that last rehab start before this. So it means he will be around 80. Velocity looks back. That's fine. So otherwise, Brady Singer's actually done well for like three straight starts now, which is kind of weird. But hopefully that works out for him.
Yeah, and I will just say about Andrew Abbott on the article that I have coming about starting pitcher buys and sells, one of the biggest overachievers, Andrew Abbott.
But it's always Andrew.
Andrew Abbott. It's always Andrew
this way. If he's not overachieving, we don't like him.
Right.
Because when we understand him, he doesn't do well.
My point is just to say, keep pitching him while he's pitching well. But yeah. I think that he's closer to a Vargas rule than he is a hold, like a guy you hold all year long.
Yeah, I know. Didn't we have this conversation 3 years ago?
We've been having it forever on repeat. The Brewers get 3 at the Cubs this weekend. They get 4 at Cincinnati, and then they get 3 at Arizona. Sorry, there's an extra row in that document.
And yeah, so, there is. It's Monday. Yeah,
there are three guys have a 2-start week, but no, next week it's 2-start week for 2 really interesting names in the Brewers rotation. It's Brandon Sproat and it's Shane Drohan. Both have 2-start weeks. Cincinnati, Arizona. I want you to talk about your general thoughts on using those guys with a 2-start week, and we could start with Sproat, who had probably his best start of the season, definitely his best start of the season against these same Reds in Cincinnati just a couple days ago.
Yeah, so a few things. One, this Brewers rotation, after being so decimated by injuries initially and removed, and we're like, who is even starting for them? Has now become, easily a top 5 rotation in baseball. I mean, I think about it and I go like Dodgers and Yankees and Mariners. And then what? And I'm like, I guess Brewers are in there, right? Is there another one? Maybe you could say Wheeler, Sanchez, and Luzardo on the front end, but in the back end, not as much. But it's pretty remarkable. And with Brandon Sproat, well, I've been waiting for ages for him to have this kind of outing. What's funny, though, is the Cincinnati Reds as an offense, they have had a whole journey where it was the Reds carpet at the beginning of the year, especially on the road. And as of late, I quickly picked up that they have become so vulnerable to high four-seamers, more so than usual across the board. And that's what Brandon Sproat did. That's what Brandon Woodruff did. There was someone else. I can't remember who it was, but they just got decimated by someone else who kind of threw decent ones up there. And, oh, yeah, Cam Schlittler did it. I'm like, of course Cam Schlittler did, but still, like, it was his 13 strikeout game. Like, this is a, okay, we know how this works. And Brandon Sproat now, at least it's not even in Cincy. I'm going to roll with that one. With Shane Drohan, it's not as good. I remember my whole experience with him was I first thought, okay, cool. You got like from the left side, you're like 94, 95. You have some interesting breakers to pair with it. Like this is kind of interesting. And the Brewers have a whole mentality of like third time through the lineup stuff. They don't really want to do it. But also is the fact that Drohan is not efficient with what he does. He's not showcasing massive whiff stuff with it right now. And I believe it was under 5 innings again for him recently. So after removing him from the list, everyone's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, you know what? You're right. Sorry. I should have had him back in for the Guardian start. And then he only went 3 strikeouts and 3 walks in that one in 5 innings. I was like, what? And he was very unimpressive, I believe, against the Reds. So, yeah, I don't really love it. But it is the Reds carpet. And the snacks, so
yeah, 4 1/3.
You do worse there.
And a 1.85 whip in that last start is problematic for your ratios. But again, no earned runs. I get it. I'm not as gung ho about Drohan as I was after like one of those really strong outings, maybe like 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I think he's fine, but I don't think this is not like some diamond in the rough, I don't believe, that you're finding on the waiver wires.
Yeah, exactly. There's a higher chance for Sproat to be that guy.
Right. I think I agree with that. 3 against Cincinnati this weekend for Pittsburgh, 4 at the Phillies, 4 at the Nationals. It's 2-start week for Braxton Ashcraft and Bubba Chandler. We saw another pretty decent start from Bubba Chandler yesterday against the Mariners in a 2-start week that's Philadelphia, Washington. Are you willing to roll the dice on Bubba Chandler?
No.
Okay. Do you at least believe Bubba Chandler's moving in the right direction?
No. I mean, he's trying to go sliders for dancing with the disco. He's trying to just throw a ton of them to right-handers. He still cannot locate his four-seamer.
Right.
you know, I watched it and I was just like, man, dude, this is painful. I will say the hits he allowed on his slider were not bad against lefties. I mean, he threw two backdoor ones down and away to Rally and to Crawford that were like really good, and they just got hits on them. Like, all right, whatever. I am more encouraged by Jared Jones recently, though, I will say. And he's going to go against the Reds. And I'm telling you, they are struggling so much against that high four-seamer. And guess who's going to throw them? Jared Jones. I hope he goes fully after, of course, his injury scare they just had. But, yeah, no, Jared Jones in hosting the Reds in PNC Park should be really, really fun. And Ashcraft is once again fighting for that ace is going to ace. So I hope he gets it soon.
Yeah. It could be a decent opportunity for you to trade away Bubba Chandler if you're in a redraft league, because the surface level stats have been much better recently. And maybe somebody is believing that we're about to see him kind of click in and take off. Mm-hmm. And so it might be an opportunity to trade him and see if you can get, you know, somebody who's been struggling a little bit more recently. Yeah. Moving on to the Cardinals. They get 3 against Miami this weekend, 3 at Atlanta next week, 3 at the Cubs. It's 2-start week for Kyle Leahy, which I am not interested in. Listen, Dustin May is back on the hill Saturday against the Marlins. I know his last start against the Royals was painful. I think you're continuing with him. It wasn't such a short run of production, and it wasn't with meaningless changes where you're like, oh, this is a Vargas rule and it's now kicked in. Like, Dustin May, I think, is set. And I like Andre Pallante this weekend against the Marlins as well. He was picked
up. Okay, is that right? Pallante instead of Pallante?
I would say Pallante because a double L. And
I just want to make sure I got this right, because I've been like trying to figure it out myself.
That was why I said Cantillo instead of Cantillo. But, you know, different pronunciations.
And again, so we could be doing, okay. Anyway, I like both of them, Dustin May and Pallante against the Marlins.
And McGreevy, I think, like, you can start him against the Marlins if you want, but I it was only a matter of time before the strong ERA came back down to earth.
Yeah, this is a 15-teamer ratio play if you want it. If quality star league, I understand, but you're not going to get strikeouts, and it's just too low of a ceiling.
Moving on to Arizona, they get 3 at Tampa Bay this weekend, 3 against the Giants, 3 against Milwaukee next week. It's 2-start week for Eduardo Rodriguez. I don't love the Milwaukee start, but he's pitching well, and I like the Giants start, and so we're going to do it. What did you think of Jose Cabrera?
He threw strikes. You don't see that in your MLB debuts. You just don't. I mean, it was cool. That's fine. He's not great, but it's against the Rays, the Brewers. That's fine.
That is a low. It's a little bit of like not a fully low arm slot, but he is a slinger. Like, you know, it's like a very. It is. I'm trying to think of how. Like, I saw the motion, and it was like 3/4, and whippy would be how I would describe it.
I'm trying to remember, because all I remember about his windup right now is just I loved how he actually went over his head with his glove. It's a 32-degree arm angle.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is lower with it, which means that the sweeper is a little bit higher. What is this? Like the 86 mile per hour curveball that is like the Ben Brown gyro slider. Yeah. That like is okay, I guess. I don't know what to make of all of that. But what I do like is that he threw strikes. He has a cutter that is his strike pitch. He has a four seamer that he doesn't have to throw. He only threw 11 in this game. He went a ton secondaries, 15 cutters, 13 sweepers, 11 curveballs, 7 changeups, 5 sinkers. With that, with those 11 four-seamers, he did a decent pitch separation. Like, he did generally get his sweeper down and away. He got his sinker and four-seamer up and into right-handers, right? So I think it's like a decent command pitcher with a kitchen sink. I'm like, okay, that's all right against the Rays.
Yeah, that was my take. I wrote him up on my Monday starting pitcher streamer article and was basically talking about him as a 15-team streamer.
You know, you remind me. So obviously you talked to St. James Chiano on Monday. I mean, you also have Sunday Peacock. I know, guys, you're waiting with your bingo cards. There you go. You can knock them off now. And did you see my comments on Twitter? I don't know if they get through.
Yeah, we commented.
Oh, you did. Okay, yeah, nice haircut.
If you thank you. If you listened, we went through those and
eventually. Commented. Oh, okay. I wasn't there long enough. I was just really irritated.
And we addressed your actual question about Kirby and Rodon. So that was on there as well.
Oh, nice.
We're going to move on to the Rockies. We're going to move off the Rockies. The Rockies, in addition to...
Oh, my gosh.
In addition to just not generally talking about the Rockies pitchers, we just covered that next week all seven games are in Coors. So you should just avoid this in general. The Dodgers get three against the Padres, three at the Padres this weekend, three at Sacramento, and then four against the Padres. Because it's a seven-game week, the Dodgers will actually have a two-start week.
But they don't care.
Of course, the Dodgers, maybe first two-start week of the entire season, it's going to be Eric Lauer in a two-start week.
So good.
At the Athletics and at the Padres. So, but I genuinely have to ask you this question. Let's 15-team leagues. He's been pitching well enough. That second start is the Padres against a left-handed pitcher. Would you roll the dice? Because in a vacuum, we would not want to start Eric Lauer in Sacramento. And there's also a gamble that he doesn't get that second start. They do something else, whatever.
I wouldn't do it. If you're going for wins, I understand. I wouldn't do it. I think also the Dodgers will have a quick hook as well. Sure. I think it's kind of by design that he's only one with a two-step, because I have to imagine that they have Monday off.
They don't.
They don't. Oh my gosh. Wow. It is Wroblewski after that. Oh man. You might see some shenanigans happen that they push back everyone, because this would be a case where Sasaki and Yamamoto both would be going on 5 days rest instead of 6 days rest, which I know the Dodgers don't want. They want like the idea of like, this is your day of the week. I don't know.
You may see a bullpen game. I don't think you're going to see like them call up River Ryan, but I think you might get like a bullpen game or something funky like that.
At the very least, what you said, I would agree with completely, of don't bank on that Sunday game for Eric Lauer.
It makes it a little more treacherous.
Yes.
The Padres, we've got... I should point out, I just want to say, Emmett Sheehan is one of my favorite buy lows, generally speaking. I think it's like a 5.5 ERA or something. Like, it's just very...
Is it really right now? Yeah, that's not...
It's... At least that's what it is from May 1st on.
What do the underlying metrics say?
Well, the underlying metrics, Nick... But we know in general that he's missing a lot of bats, and we know that a lot of the struggles were velocity related, and he has settled in around 94.5 with the velocity. And I don't think it's like, hey, Emmett Sheehan, he's a top 30 starting pitcher like some people wanted him to be at the beginning of the season. But like, I just think Emmett Sheehan is trending in the right... I think he's fixing some of the things we wanted to. I think he's trending in the right direction. So like, hey, Bubba Chandler's had a really good run of production. If you could flip Bubba Chandler for like an Emmett Sheehan who hasn't, like, that's a move I would make.
Oh man, that's a really good one there. But I would think that everyone who has Emmett Sheehan still is because they believe in this, and they should. I mean, we're completely with you, though.
Yeah, you might be able to find somebody they believe in more.
Right, completely. And Emmett Sheehan isn't throwing his changeup much,
right,
which is kind of weird because he should be. The whole thing about the velocity that, you know, we were talking about a ton early on the season, we're just kind of okay, fine, 94, whatever. But Emmett Sheehan is a better pitcher than we've seen. We've also had some anomalies of that second inning that made him throw 44 pitches or whatever in it, and he got pulled early because of that. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So I wouldn't be thinking about it. And also, but we were talking about rotations before, Eric. And can we just acknowledge what the Padres have gone through? And huge props to that entire pitching development crew. Whoever the people working in San Diego, because let's be honest, Walker Buehler is pitching well for them.
Sure.
Randy Vasquez has been valuable for them. Germán Márquez has not been the worst thing in the world, right? Like, they are still in all the playoff talks. They're in the season, everything like that, with one of the worst offenses and with this rotation.
Yeah, this rotation would have been great 6 years ago, maybe. Yeah, Buehler, Vasquez, King, Canning, Marquez. It's not great. And
oh man,
it's three against the Dodgers this weekend, three against at the Cubs next week, and then four at the Dodgers again. So it's like, yeah, you get a Griffin, Canning, Germán Márquez two-step that's Cubs, Dodgers. You're not going to do it. Michael King, hey, he looked better in his last start. What does he get for that? He gets the Dodgers twice in a row. it's not great. Like, if you could bench him in your league, like, I would be okay with that. I get in a 15-team league, you might have to throw him out there and cross your fingers and hope for the best. But I'm avoiding pretty much this whole rotation if I can for this stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sold on Michael King is fixed, sadly.
No, so. I'm not either. That's why I wish he was facing a team next time out.
Yeah, I would avoid if I can, but I put him in question because there is a chance. Like, I always want to acknowledge that there are guys with higher ceilings than the do not start tiers. Yeah. Like, hey, look, he could just be great and that would be really cool. You know, it's a lot more of a probability there. And we have the Giants to close out the NL here.
We do. Three against, the Braves this weekend, three at the Diamondbacks, three at Colorado. That makes a two-start week for Tyler Mallee at Arizona, at Colorado. You can't do that.
He did get up to 93 last start and is still ill, but not enough. Not enough at all for me.
And especially not even if the Arizona start winds up being good, I will not have enough confidence to go into Coors with Tyler Mallee. Logan Webb's pitching well. We're obviously going to roll him out there. Robbie Ray, sure. Like, you know, I don't really know. I mean, it's like
Robbie Ray is so fascinating. And you know what? At least he has this changeup feel. He's tried to incorporate sinkers to help nullify the fact that he hasn't been able to locate his fastball. The slider was closer to where it's supposed to be. The fastball's, it's like it's taking very small steps forward.
Yeah.
And I think I'd go for it against Atlanta, but Coors, I just can't. While Webb is trying to get his crown, he's trying to get coordinated as an ace is going to ace again. So that's why I have him as green against Atlanta and Colorado. And by the way, if you guys don't have PL Pro, then you don't know that we are reading off of my sit and start grid for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. What Eric and I are talking about, I've already outlined to you guys publicly where I stand on all of these pitchers on those four tiers. We're just reading off of them.
And I will say,
if you do
have PL Pro, this is a good refresher. Like on Sunday when you're doing your waivers, like I will have this document open. I'll remember what we talked about, but then I'll say, okay, like, am I missing anybody? Who were the guys that had two starts? Who were the guys we liked their setups? Like it is a really good resource, you know, weekly, like daily, but if you're not in a daily moves league, it's a good resource for your Sunday waivers as well.
Oh, there we go. You can get 15% off with promo code podcast. Go sign up today for PL Pro Yearly.
Do it.
Eric, and when we got to talk about the American League, we got like, 10 minutes? Let's go and do it.
We got like close to a half an hour.
Okay, all right, let's go. Knock it out.
We're going to do that, though, after this break. Starting with the AL East, we've got the Orioles, three against the Nationals this weekend, three against the White Sox, three at Cincinnati. It's two-start week. For nobody, apparently, according to Fangraphs, because they have Dean Kramer coming back into the rotation next week. We'll see how that goes. It would be a two-start week for Shane Baz, White Sox, Reds. So that's just check in on Sunday, wherever you're listening. Just check in, see how if they update that and if anybody has a two-start week.
Now, I do want to make a small correction. So this is not according to Fangraphs. Roster Resource and us both get our expected pitchers from RotoWire.
Okay.
Clay Link and James Anderson. They actually, a member approached me being like, oh yeah, right. So we actually expanded to 28 days out because you requested it. And it used to be 14 days. So you're welcome, everyone. You guys have much better data for pitchers for the full month now instead of just 2 weeks because here at PitchWest, we requested it if we were purchasing that fee and they do a phenomenal job. So thank you guys.
Sorry to RotoWire, James Anderson, everybody over there. But yes, that's where we get this from. And then I'll say Brandon Young, you could start him against Washington this weekend. I wrote him up in my starting pitcher streamers article Monday. I know a lot of people have been discussing that he's like made changes that might legitimize what he's doing right now. There have been some changes, in my opinion, and you could read the article over on NBC Sports. I just think they're minor. Yeah. And I think that they take him from being somebody I would not have rostered last year to somebody I will stream this year. And so he's riding a hot streak. I'm happy to use him. I don't love him going into Cincinnati next week, and I would probably try to avoid that.
Yeah, I would say he's a tritone. He's a minor fifth on this roster. And I can't believe it took me so long to make that joke. But Brandon Young, he throws a four-seamer upstairs to lefties really effectively. Thing is, the Nationals, it is like CJ Abrams and it is James Wood. And maybe he has a splitter working against them, but I just don't think it's that good. I think he's gone away with a fair amount here, and the overall stuff is just not that great in my view. So I'm out there. Kyle Brash is looking much better. He's throwing those breaking balls at a ticking or two higher now, and it's just, oh my gosh, he's doing it. I'm curious to see what Dean Kramer does. Trevor Rogers against the Nationals tonight. And this morning is when I really learned that the Nationals are the number one team against lefties. So I was like, oh, dude, okay, I'm putting him lower in that. But hopefully he's good enough for the White Sox next week. And, yeah, I'm not really a believer in what Shane Boz had been doing before the bad one recently, but it's the same guy. So not really there.
Boston, three against the Yankees this weekend. Well, I guess it's four, but, you know, three more against the Yankees this weekend. Three against the Nationals, three against the Angels. It's two-start week for Ranger Suarez, Nationals, Angels. Even though, as you pointed out, the Nationals are good against lefties, you're still going to roll with that. But Jake Bennett against the Angels next week. So we're not going to use Jake Bennett this weekend against the Yankees. I think you and I can both agree. He was far more effective against the Rockies than I expected. And I took my Red Sox glasses off. And I will say that this season, my Red Sox glasses make everything look horrible and sad and depressing. So I went and I read your breakdown of how he looked. And you did see what I saw, which was nice, which is like, hey, this could be a swatch. Like, this is what we're talking about.
I mean, it was, Eric, this is why you're the host here. Like, we agree with love. We see things similarly. Yeah. I like it.
Fastball's up, changeup's down. It's a six-pitch mix. I think he only used the cutter three or four times, so it's not like maybe you want to call it a five-pitch mix instead, whatever it is. But it's a deep pitch mix with fastballs up and changeups down and away from righties. We've seen that work for guys like Noah Cameron, who also don't have, you know, incredible velocity. Bennett is 93.3, 93.5, and he's got – he's 6'6", so he's got the extension – and so that makes that play up closer to, like, call it 95 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's he's 7'2 extension or something like that. Yeah. It's like, ooh, okay, that's pretty cool. And the thing about that Colorado stuff that really impressed me was he didn't throw many of the four seamers in the zone, and he still got all these strikes on it. So that is what we saw in the first start from Jake Bennett. Then we didn't see it for maybe two. I think that was on May 1st or so. And then I was like, okay, maybe. And then I remember you sent me a text being like, yo, he's a swatch. And I was like, so I think actually in the streaming article, I put him at the bottom of questionable because I can recognize that Jake Bennett could do this, right? He could still perform against the Yankees. It's not like the Yankees are just like, well, everyone's going to be destroyed by us. And we saw Connelly early have a good enough outing. But yeah, I don't really want to do it against the Angels, though. I think that could be when we start jumping in. Rainier Suarez is looking great. We are down for that. Connelly Early is a probable against the Nationals, and I maybe should push that down because of how good they are against southpaws. But at the same time, Connelly Early is getting whiffs. He got whiffs on everything yesterday, and the home run that he allowed to it was Rosario. No, maybe Caballero. The 1-2 curveball down just drove me up the wall. I just, oh my gosh, you watched the video this morning. It just drove me bonkers because there are three problems with it. One, he already showed a curveball in that at bat. Two, he just got a swing miss on a fastball upstairs and should throw another one higher up. And three, if you're going to throw a curveball 1-2, you got to get it down under the zone and not down in the middle of the zone. So even if he is expecting heat, he can adjust and still hit that out. Oh gosh, Connelly Early, it's just the little things. It's the little things. And that's what takes you from being a very good pitcher to a great, great pitcher.
It's a young guy still learning some things. Moving on to the Yankees, three at Boston this weekend, three against Detroit next week, three against Minnesota. It's two-start week for Ryan Weathers. You and I have already talked about the fact that we know that he weathered some poor outings before.
You just had to, didn't you?
I had to. Yeah, but we were still in. You have all of these pitchers as either an auto start or a probable start, and I agree. I don't think there's that much more to say. You're going to fire up everybody in the rotation for this next stretch. Moving on to the Rays. Three against Arizona this weekend. Three against Kansas City next week. Three against Houston. It's two-start week for Griffin Jacks, Royals, and Astros. He is 41% rostered in Yahoo formats, which I know because he graduated out of my streamer article, but that's still pretty low. And if he's available in your league, I would use him for that two-start week. But you know who we have to talk about here, Nick?
Griffin Jacks.
No.
Skin Ian Seymour.
Yes. It's Mr. Swatch. I know he wasn't the impetus for all swatches, but that's part of what Ian Seymour's appeal was. And he was like my most drafted player coming into the season, including draft holds. Yeah. Because right. It was basically free at the end of drafts. And I was like, he's going to win this rotation spot. And he didn't. And I should say that even in this start on Tuesday, or not the start, the bulk relief appearance on Thursday, even in the bulk relief appearance on Thursday, the changeup wasn't as good as we saw it in previous seasons. But he's keeping it down. And so it's not like, hey, this is the Ian Seymour we saw when he was cruising last year. But we got a really good outing, and I know the Royals were missing Bobby Witt and Michael Garcia, and I almost said Michael Franco. That is,
I know, like, I wanted to. That's kind of where my head goes. See Michael, like, it's got to be Franco
And Vinny Pasquantino. But like, look, I put Ian Seymour in our waiver wire article today. He's 7% rostered on Yahoo. To me, this is a perfect guy to be picking up because you see a path where he just becomes a guy who you just keep on your roster in 12-team leagues the rest of the season. He was a very good pitching prospect in the minors. If the changeup gets back to the version of the changeup we've seen in recent years and it's not too far off, then he could really cruise for the remainder of the season. And so I'm trying to add him where I can, in part because I like the start against the Royals again this week, but I also think that this could just be something that becomes like what Dustin May was for 12 starts, where you were like, I'm getting a really good starting pitcher for a long period of time.
Yeah. So I didn't watch this one. I just, of course, looked through the dashboard. So that was me being a Seymour skimmer. And yes. It was the changeup was low, not high strike rates. Generally did it fine. And if it weren't the Royals next, I don't know if I would actually be in on it. This is the one concern I do have about Ian Seymour. He's not really excelling. And even last year, he had some moments where he did, and then it wasn't all the time. It's a little more volatile at the moment than I would like. But you're right. It could be him getting into a groove, into this rhythm, and then cruising after that. I do want to mention with Griffin Jacks, by the way, before June 24th, just one game had he been above 70 pitches. And that was 72 on June 1st. And then he had just under 70 on June 19th. Then on the 24th, Griffin Jacks threw 88 pitches, Eric. Yep. 88 pitches. Now, it was just five innings. But the Rays are not the kind of team that is just about innings. It's more about pitch count. And the fact that they went 88 pitches, because also the blister was an issue, like, hey, let's not overthrow you. Let's not do this to aggravate it. I'm encouraged that if he's more efficient, Griffin Jacks will push six innings in at least one of these games against Houston and the Royals. I'm very, very excited about it.
Yes, I'm also very much still in on Griffin Jacks. Traded for him in our Tout Wars. Well, not our, because you're in a different one, but traded for him in Tout Wars.
Oh, you're enjoying that Griffin War.
Hey, Frank, thanks for the trade. It was nice. It was a little win-win, I think, for both of us.
Where are you? How is your Tout Wars going?
I'm in fourth. I was in the top for a while. Alex Chamberlain has just a juggernaut right now, and he's cruising. I lost losing Cole Reagans hurt. Ooh. And I lost like Drake Baldwin for a stretch. But my pitching has struggled more than I wanted it to. And that was why I went out and got Griffin Jacks, because I needed some ratio help. And I thought that was going to be helpful for me. And maybe if Tetsuya Imai turns it around, because I never dropped him in that league.
Oh, wow.
I also never dropped Michael King. So there are some guys where it's like, if I can get some of these guys to turn it around, then I have a decent shot. But I am sadly releasing Cole Reagans for my fab rebate. And so that's tough.
Yeah, that is rough. I did this with the craft yesterday. This is, I'm in first right now in nice. Tower Wars head to head, though. It's head to head, not Roto.
You do.
I can only hope. Yeah. Alex Fast beat me. Alex Fast already has a Tout Wars championship, and I don't, and I hate this. So I'm really hoping this is my year. You might not remember this, Eric, but do you remember how I drafted this team?
Yeah, you were, didn't you get like a, you weren't even, you were coaching your basketball team.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the one where I had like the one sheet of paper.
Yeah. Like, listen, sometimes you just got to bring it back to the old school methods. That's
look, guys,
how you have the most success.
You know, it's better to be lucky than good. All right. It's better to be lucky than good. We are going to
speaking continue of that,
to the AL Central, aren't we?
No, we have one last team in the AL East.
Come on. It's not American. I'm just kidding. It's Canadian.
I know, but they are the all-star leaders. The Toronto Blue Jays, they're going to have the entire all-star team starting. The Blue Jays have three against Texas this weekend, three against the Mets, three at Seattle. So that's a pretty nice pitching setup at Seattle and against the Mets. It's two-start week for Treya Savage. I mean, there are some command issues happening here. But against the Mets at Seattle, it's a pretty nice setup. I think you just have to trust it.
You know, but what bothers me is that he did the thing that I wanted, low four seamers.
Yeah.
And then he just didn't.
Sure.
And I'm like, why not? It works.
Because he has some command issues. I don't know that he can command his stuff.
Well, I mean, you can still see intent, though.
Sure. Yes. Sure.
And the intent was not what we wanted. It's,
There are two veterans in this rotation that I'm legitimately concerned about, though.
You're concerned about Gausman.
I'm not concerned like, hey, drop Kevin Gausman.
Right, but you're concerned about him and Shane Bieber.
Yeah, but for sure concerned about Bieber. I mean, there were injury concerns about Bieber, and he just didn't look really good coming back.
James was saying, this is the name value of Strider earlier than all over. I'm like, okay, all right. I agree with what Eric said on that Monday, was saying, like, look, like, might as well take a chance. Who cares? It's like you're getting it for free. Totally agree, Eric. And it was still ill before, and maybe there is something back. But yeah, the movement was a little bit off. It wasn't really good. Shane Bieber, he looks not like Shane Bieber right now.
Yeah. Hopefully Sunday against Texas, maybe we'll see if he rights the ship a little bit. Yeah. The Gausman thing is, you and I have been saying on this podcast for a while that it's like he's essentially a two pitch pitcher.
He has the slider, whatever.
And we're in a stretch again where the four seam velocity is down and it's getting hit hard. And so it's just like this. I know this happens to Gausman at times and has for a few years. And so that's why I'm not like, hey, cut him. Like, we've seen him bounce back from this many times before, but he's also now an older pitcher and maybe the four seam velocity doesn't bounce back as much as we wanted. And I can say that he's an older pitcher because I'm 41 years old and I'm
like, you weren't allowed to before.
Well, no, I think it's, you know, because it's relative, but now it's like, I know what older means.
So just to give some insight on the pitch velocity dropping, he started the season around like 94 to 95. And then in the last, I'm trying to see it. So it was 94.5 against the Yankees, which is absolutely normal.
Yes.
And then it was 92.7 again in Chicago. And then it was 93.4 last night. And I do want to give some insight in that, in April, he did have a three-game stretch of 92.4, 93.8,
92.3. Okay, fair.
One of those was in the dome of Arizona, the 92.4, so it wasn't even like it was freezing or something. It does happen with Gausman, and I'm not necessarily afraid of this. Now, to his credit, he also pulled back the four-seamer usage to 41% when it was lower, but it was likely because he had it at a 57% strike rate in that game. And he had a 27% called strike rate yesterday against the Rangers. I think he just got singled out in that one. 10 hits is the second most. Actually, it's tied for the most he's allowed this year. And he did the same thing when he was throwing 94.6 against the Rays of all teams. And then what does he do the next one? Six shutout frames. So I just feel like this is the classic Gausman, as you're saying, of just he's going to have these bad moments and whatnot. This is not where, you know, history ends for Kevin Gausman.
No. And listen, you get the Mets next week, so it's a chance to right the ship for sure.
Completely.
But now we will move on to the AL Central. The White Sox get three against the Royals this weekend, three at Baltimore next week, three at Cleveland. It's two-start week for both Sean Burke and Eric Fetty. I'm not interested in Eric Fetty, but Sean Burke, for sure, I am interested in that two-start week. I wrote about him in the starting pitcher streamer article on Monday. I did come away with that from that article saying I'll be more interested in Sean Burke in 2027 because I think there are things he's doing with like the sinker and the cutter that the command of those pitches are going in and out because they're newer pitches for him. I believe it's the sinker is a brand new pitch and the cutter is one that he's leaning on more often. And so my thought process was just, as I've done a lot of new pitch articles in years past, it usually takes a season.
That's interesting.
For the command of those pitches to become consistent. But I also took from that like Sean Burke is rounding out the arsenal in a way that I like. And there are going to be stretches where the command of those pitches is working and he's getting good results. And I do like the matchups against Baltimore and Cleveland. And so even though I think there may be some rough patches throughout the remainder of the season, I like the last start. I like the upcoming schedule. And so I'm in for right now, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, man. So Sean Burke, I feel like we've been chasing him for 2.5 years now. Mm-hmm. And even in this season, I still feel really weird about it. Because, yeah, he has these games where he does get his four-seamer a little better to lefties. But the secondaries are kind of there, but they're kind of not. And I've never really felt comfortable with how Sean Burke approaches a game. I don't consider him actually an executor, sure. Right? And you're saying, okay, I'm more interested in him next year. And I am thinking, well, he's in a rhythm right now. And there's a part of me that feels like this is more confident than I will be in March next year.
Maybe. I mean,
right. But I'm not saying that. And I hear what you're saying, though, about like taking time. And that's a really good point because, yeah, you've showed that over the years of just you need that extra time. Look at Bryce Miller, for example, mm-hmm. and the way that his secondaries are like incredible now.
Yeah.
And he needed time to be able to get that. Right. So that's a really good point. Regardless, right now. Yeah, Burke. You go with Burke now. Anthony Kay gets the Guardians. You got to do it. Anthony Kay. It's time, Eric.
I know.
I was whispering it everywhere. Oh, no, Eric. Your excitement. The witch's curse.
I got excited and the microphone said no. I said last week, I was like, I'm doing this Anthony Kay two-step. And the first start was pretty good. And, you know, he gets the Royals this weekend. I'm cautiously optimistic. And I would keep it rolling against the Guardians. And so, yeah. And if Noah Schultz comes back next week, I'm not interested in the immediate. Like,
but if it's David Sandlin.
David Sandlin is this weekend on Friday.
Also would be that Wednesday for Schultz if Schultz isn't ready.
But or maybe I'm not saying what they do with Fetty. We'll see. There is a possibility that Noah Schultz comes back. We know he's rehabbing. I'm just not running out to get him immediately.
Yeah.
I know he's a big name prospect, but
I just want to just at least let people know there's a possibility that David Sandlin, who did look pretty good in the first game. The only thing was a home run to Buxton on like the third pitch of the game or whatever. And then of course he was not went to the minors, etc. He could show up and do great things here. And then everyone's going to be interested in that game against Baltimore if he does stick around. So I just want to at least give it a heads up to that. And then Davis Martin is just a Toby now. Just ignore everything else we've heard about him for the first 2 months of the year. Just now, just dream like a Toby. Okay, yep. Cool.
Guardians, 3 against Seattle this weekend. All home next week. 3 against Texas, 4 against the White Sox. 2-start week for Parker Messick and Tanner Bibee. You know, we've talked about Tanner Bibee all the time on here, but it's a decent 2-start week. And so if you want to pop some Pepcid and put him in for both those starts and just hope for the best.
Did you go say for Pepcid? It.
Pepcid AC.
Pepto.
No, Pepto Bismol.
Pepcid AC, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I forgot about, I was like, Pepsi? Pepto Bismol? Put some Pepcid, pep in your drink. Yeah. That's fine. Ryan Pepio?
And now the big thing apparently is peptides and injecting peptides.
Oh gosh, let's not do this. And you know what? Look, guys, I'll bring you back to the Guardians, but I won't do that until after this break.
Now that we're back on the Guardians.
Okay, for real now. Oh, Eric's excited about his Guardians again. And that means the mic goes out. I'm going to restart the break.
Now that we're back from the break, you had a very positive write-up about Joey Cantillo.
How could I not after your texts? I mean, you know, it was just, oh man. Wait, was it yours? Or maybe it was Jake Crumbler actually.
I think it was
excited.
Jake. It was not. It was,
oh,
not,
it was not you. That's right. He's like, dude, did you see what Cantillo did? He did two things. He threw harder, and he also stopped throwing his four seamer and threw the curveball all of a sudden for strikes a ton. I'm really curious about the game tonight against the Mariners. I talked about the Guardians a lot yesterday on The Craft with Eno. So if you want to hear more about them, you should definitely listen to that podcast. Actually, that was on Wednesday. Long story short, a lot of them are throwing more sinkers, except Cantillo. I think that Gavin Williams figures out that you're not supposed to throw all the four-seamers. Or sorry, all the sinkers. You should be throwing a lot more four-seamers with the sinker. And your boy Gavin, do you see what Gavin did? Do you see this?
No.
No. Do you see what he did his last start with his four-seamer? Only threw it like 97, 98 and had it at 7.4 feet of extension?
Yeah, yes, I saw that.
Oh, you don't see me enthused.
No, I'm trying not to. I'm trying not to, you know, have the mic crap out of me again. So I'm not over. But no, but we've talked about how extension is like can change start by start.
Very true. 7.4 is nothing I've ever seen.
No. Well, he's a big dude. So
he's a big dude. Yeah. Parker Messick is also throwing harder. He's at he was at 96 and 95 as opposed to 94 and 83, which I think is really cool. Also, is moving away from the sinker train finally, going back to the four seamer changeup, which I think is good for him. And then there's Lay Ciccone's just like, yo, I know cutter is my best pitch. I'm just going to stop doing that. And I don't get it. I don't like Tanner Bibee. Not in a house. Not with Disney.
A mouse.
I just feel like it's a coin flip still.
Yep. Continuing to move on. We got a, well, I have a school pickup later. So we're going to go through this. But the Tigers, 3 against Houston. Next week, 3 at the Yankees, 3 at Texas. It's 2 start week for, well, nobody.
Casey Bynes might be kind of interesting. We'll see if the slider works against the Yankees. Troy Melton looked really good. I'm very curious. He's finally getting whiffs on all of his pitches, increases velocity. Command is there. That's good. Kedar Montero is your whip guy. So fine. Vander Valdez finally got the curveball going. That's really cool. And Jack Flaherty do not want to touch.
Yep. Royals, 3 against the White Sox this weekend. And then, interestingly, it is 3 against Tampa Bay and then 2 against the Phillies. Okay. So the Royals only have 5 games next week. So that's no 2 starts. And also remember that for their hitters, Noah Cameron had turned a corner and then the last 3 starts have not been particularly good. He was basically just a streamer. And so I think you need to sit this one out against Tampa Bay.
Might sit out also Seth Lugo.
Yeah, I was thinking
Seth Lugo just hasn't been worth it at all. It's not really anyone I want to start on the Royals right now. Unfortunately, nope. Where's Bubich? I want him back.
Yeah, he's working. He's working his way back. But yes, I'm avoiding for that as well. The Twins, 3 against the Rockies this weekend at home, which is nice for Taj Bradley and maybe Connor Prelip. Next week, it is 3 at Houston, 3 at the Yankees. It's 2 start week for Zebby Matthews. But you know that we've been skeptics. And at Houston, at the Yankees, I cannot start Zebby Matthews in a 2 start week. And Taj Bradley, I mean, even when he was cruising earlier in the season, I've never been a huge believer. So for me, he's more of a streamer. So like, cool, fire him up at home against the Rockies. I probably wouldn't do it against Houston.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yep. The Athletics, they have 3 at the Angels this weekend, and then they're home all next week. So it's 3 against the Dodgers, 3 against the Marlins. So that's a 2 start week for Gage Jump.
Let's go, baby. I think Gage Jump is so good. So I think he's even so good. His 4-seamer throwing so many strikes, 75% strike rate on it is insane. And then you have the slider, also about a 70% strike rate. I think he's just going to get better with those secondaries. Also, the changeup should show up at some point. So go with Gage Jump. Just let it ride.
And you think that's, just to be clear, 2 start week next week, both at home. Dodgers, one of those starts. You're still doing it.
Do it.
Okay. What do you think about Jack Perkins this weekend? On the road.
I think this season, I wasn't even tempted to put him as a probable start.
Yeah.
Because I think Jack Perkins is pitching the best ball of his life. And now it's not even in Sacramento Verde. It's in Los Angeles. The last start against the Angels, wasn't a good ERA, but I feel he actually pitched really well and just had one moment. That is someone to look at there. JT Ginn, we'll see, but he's questionable. He's definitely underneath Jack Perkins.
Perkins, I have Perkins and Ian Seymour in this range of like, these guys haven't like quote unquote figured it out. Like, oh my God, run and get them. But I think those are guys you want to be adding because I think we could get, they could click and have some hot stretches.
Short-term Perkins over Seymour.
Okay.
Yeah.
For me, it's Seymour, but I'm not rational when it comes to Ian Seymour. So I think we just need
You just got to see more Perkins. Okay.
Yes. See more Perkins. Astros, 3 against the Tigers this weekend, 3 home against Minnesota next week, 3 home against Tampa Bay. That is, they're not set up for a two-start week, but it would be for Peter Lambert if he remains in the rotation, if they keep things the way they are, that they could be going to a six-man with Mike Burrows. So just keep checking in on that. But I'm curious, 2 starts now, Nick, for Tatsuya Imai.
Don't do this. You know, it's so weird. It's just weird. All right? I don't like weird. You want to do weird? Fine. Coin flip it. But I just... It's not like he's doing anything massively different to do this. Also, Christian Javier coming back from the IL. Do you have any interest in that?
In Imai against the Twins?
Javier in what? Coming back.
Oh, Javier. Sorry. All my computer stuff is out for me. No, I have no interest in Javier. It's sad, but I can't do it.
Yeah.
I had no interest coming into the year. I have no interest after another injury, so I'm done.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
All right.
Angels. 3 against the Athletics this weekend, 3 against at Seattle, 3 against the Red Sox. Walbert Urania, we've talked about Vargas Rule streaming him. It's home against the Athletics and then against Boston. Sorry, yeah, home against the Athletics and home against Boston. Love both those starts. Reed Detmers, I just want to say people were saying, Reed Detmers, you're off my team now because his last start was bad. And just like, I understand that he's hurt so many of us, and I understand that you see the one bad start and you're like, it's happening again.
But however,
I don't think it's happening again. I don't.
Because what says what?
What?
The underlying metrics.
Oh, I was going to say the duck says quack. What do you mean?
The underlying metrics is the first missing word there. The underlying metrics phrase. And what do they say? They say that the slider was actually much better this time around, and he really just got bad luck in that one. I think it was a careful Icarus. Reed Detmers looked much better, and now he also did that in Sacramento, and now he's hosting the Athletics.
Yeah.
I love this start. This is great. And then he gets the Red Sox. Sure, that's fine. Why are they off on July 1st? It's a Wednesday. They also
on the other side. Seattle has been hosting some World Cup games.
They have? Well, there you go. Okay. I did not notice that. So there you go. That's why that's happening. Jose Soriano, I have to just tell everybody this. After the first month, he has looked absurdly like 2025. The number one thing has been his four-seamer strike rate, and he just has not been close to matching that from the first month.
Yeah.
So it's that easy. It's, you know, can we add him to the list of the guys that we just say, hey, y'all, this isn't going to last. Please trade him away. Next year,
he should have been traded so early at the beginning of the season.
But like, it's easy for us to say this now.
I know. Well, but no. But to be fair, I think we were saying it then.
Right. I mean, I had to eventually, like, after his last good start, I put him at as high as 30.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. You have to rank, and especially when you rank how you do.
Right. What I'm getting at though is, we have to. I'm not regretting that. It's more of just the conversations that I would have with everybody over that month. It's like, yeah, but what if it's real? It's like, well, sure, but it's about the probabilities of everything. And just, I want him to be a prime example of understanding what we saw then and why we can't just instantly react when there really isn't a massive shift.
Yeah.
And the shift being that he threw more strikes with his four-seamer is not quite sellable to me when the guy still has a high walk rate, you know, right.
Especially because a lot of those four seamers were just being chased out of the zone. They were, and the pitch itself wasn't much better.
Yeah.
Last two teams, we go to Seattle at Cleveland this weekend, 3 against the Angels next week, 3 against Toronto. It's a 2-start week potentially for Brian Wu. They're doing all the piggyback thing.
Eric, what did you text me about Brian Wu?
Did I text him?
You did, because of their outfielder.
Oh, yeah. About the Randy Arozarena, the like shallow fly ball in left field that Arozarena, who's coming back from an injury, like kind of jogged after and then watched fall like 3 feet in front of him. And that put runners on second and third. And then the whole inning kind of unraveled. And I was like, this is ridiculous.
Bryce Miller or Brian Wu?
Brian Wu, but
there's a part of me that's like, Bryce Miller is the best pitcher on the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah.
I'm oh my gosh, Eric, he is so good. He's when Bryce Miller was amazing, Oh, sorry. When Bryce Miller was throwing in previous seasons, it would be like 60% fastballs between his four seamer and his sinker, maybe sometimes 70%. He just went 35% fastballs against the Pirates. The only damage were two home runs. And one of them was a really stupid fastball to Henry Davis. It got away with one in like middle early on, one of the two he threw to right-handers. And the second one was later that bad at 1-2. And it's like, he's throwing all of these secondaries now for strikes ineffectively. I know you got to go, but I just want to tell everybody, no, Bryce Miller.
I get so it. I think I just have to shake the like, hey, he ended last year hurt and started this year hurt.
I know,
and
the loose bodies. Okay. You know, let's say health for everybody here.
Yeah, man. I was a big believer in Wu coming into the year. And so I might still want to say Wu, but I understand that logic tells me and what's happening on the mound tells me that it's Bryce Miller. Like he looks really, really good.
So good right now.
Yeah. And so maybe you want to say like they're side by side, whatever it is. And Logan Gilbert with the added
last five spin
on the four seamer. And
yeah,
you know,
he's throwing the thing is so weird about Gilbert. He's just filling the zone with four seamers now and doing well with it. And it's like,
but more vert and they're working a little more than they were earlier.
So it's, that might be it for him too. Like it's, oh man. Brian Wu's fine though. Don't worry about it. Emerson Hancock, maybe not.
Hopefully Brian Wu's fine. Fingers crossed for Brian Wu.
Don't worry
fine.
About the whole piggybacking thing is hilarious. And like, we're not going to have that rant.
We did that discussion last time. Right. Finishing off with the Rangers, 3 at Toronto this weekend, 3 at Houston, three at Cleveland next week. And then 3 at 3 home against Detroit. They are also Dallas area has been hosting World Cup games. I wonder if that's why they have the weird
Friday gotta be
off, Friday off day in there. That's 2-start week for Jacob deGrom, Cleveland, and Detroit. So we really like that. Mackenzie Gore had a good last start, goes at Cleveland. So that's really nice. Eovaldi is in auto start right now. Jack Leiter on the IL with that ankle injury. So you're getting Cal Quantrill, but he threw just 2 innings, I think, the last time.
That was a bullpen game, really, for him. I don't really think
he's going to, like, even if Cal Quantrill becomes a thing, it's not right now because he needs to continue to be stretched out. And I'm not.
He's the unquantrifiable, okay?
Yeah.
The one question I do have, Eric, which I know you have for me, I'm going to give it to you first. Kumar Rocker, are you starting him?
No.
Why not?
I don't trust it. Yeah. I just don't trust it. And I think Toronto, despite their struggles, I look at their lineup and I just say, this is a lineup that I wouldn't necessarily trust Kumar Rocker against.
So, right, he just had 20 whiffs and a 46% CSW in 5 innings against the Marlins, which is hilarious, but that was because the slider was just going crazy.
And what was he doing? What did he do before that, though?
Okay, this is what, wait, that's the tweet we get when we showcase, oh, look at this filthy pitch. Yeah, but show me the pitch before then. It's like,
well, that's like, it's like when I send you some of those, like the AAA things, and it was like, look at this slider. And you're like, he allowed 4 runs in 4 innings. And I'm like, who cares? You see that slider?
The person who's put out GIFs, who made his name initially as the one who would be first the GIFs before Pitching Ninjas showed up. It was, I understand this so well of like, yeah, but what happened before? And it's just, yeah, Kumar Rocker, look, it's a weird phenomenon. If you want to do a really cool article, Eric, which I highly recommend you doing because I'm too lazy, is tell me why all of these 84 mile per hour sliders are succeeding.
Okay. It's worth looking into.
You should do that.
We'll talk to Kyle Bland because I would need to get stats for sliders in velocity bands.
Yeah, sure.
Because we would need to prove that 84 mile an hour sliders are succeeding versus.
I wonder if we could do a whole thing of like buckets of stuff sliders and their performances and then see if there's like a reverse bell curve. You know, seeing like the extremes of like the 83, 84 mile per hour slider is doing well, but the 86, 87 isn't. And then the 90 ones are.
Kyle
Bland, what's up? I know you listen to the crack more, but you shouldn't
have a conversation. We're going to have a conversation, Kyle, because we like this idea and we're not smart enough. So
yeah, no, but we got to go. He's got to go.
We do. I got to go to do a school pickup. It's the last day of school today, so I'm out of here. I am Eric Smolsky, Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to get so excited that my microphone's going to... Oh, it did!